The ultimate parenting challenge, or I mean, really, the ultimate leadership challenge is figuring out how to get someone to do the right thing when you're not looking.
Right.
When the boss is gone, when the parent is away, what kicks in then?
And that's exactly what we're diving into today.
Yeah.
We're looking at sources that really push back on the old models of motivation, the whole reward and punishment cycle.
Yeah.
Instead, they focus completely on fostering internal motivation. The whole mission is to figure out how we can maximize positive change by tapping into what the source material calls the ultimate parenting tool, training the conscience.
So we're looking for the method that gets a child to genuinely care about others, to finish their work, to look for things that need to be done without being asked.
Exactly.
And this whole system, based on Dr. Scott Taransky's materials, it all hinges on this heart idea. They frame the conscience as this built-in mechanism, a guidance system that's already inside us.
Yeah, it's designed to prompt right action. It's like It's like built-in moral wiring. But, and this is really the key, it has to be trained. It needs to be calibrated to actually be useful.
That idea alone provides so much hope, I think, for parents who just feel totally exhausted by the constant nagging and reminding.
It does. And the source material, it does anchor this in a faith context, citing Paul in Acts, striving to keep his conscience clear. But the fundamental insight is, you're not building a moral sensor from scratch.
You're just tuning an instrument that's already there.
Precisely. You are educating an existing and very powerful internal guide.
It's interesting because even though this source uses scriptural references, the idea of a conscience is, I mean, it's universal. It's in philosophy, psychology.
Absolutely.
For our deep dive, we're really looking at it as that internal system that helps kids build self-control and empathy.
For sure. We're focused on the practical side. Mm-hmm. How do you train that guide? If you do it right, you're basically making the conscience capable of being the parent or the boss when you're not even in the room.
Okay, so let's unpack this internal system. What exactly is the conscience, and how is it different from, say, the heart or the human spirit? Because those terms get mixed up a lot.
It is so important to draw a clear line there. The sources say the conscience and heart are deeply related. One text mentions cleansing a guilty conscience and having a sincere heart.
So they're connected.
They're connected. But the conscience is described as this universal, innate wiring. Everybody has this capacity for internal moral judgment, regardless of their beliefs. It's the raw material.
The foundational human equipment for making moral choices.
That's a great way to put it. It's the basic wiring. But, and here's the critical nuance that makes the training so essential. The conscience is not the ultimate standard.
Okay.
It's not infallible. You can't just rely on it by itself, because a poorly trained conscience can absolutely lead you astray.
Give us an example of that. What does an inappropriately satisfied conscience look like?
Well, think about revenge. A kid, or even an adult, might feel totally justified in returning cruelty for cruelty.
Right, they had it coming.
Exactly. And they might feel this sense of satisfaction, even righteousness, after they do it. That feeling of being good about the action. That's the conscience being inappropriately satisfied because it hasn't been calibrated to a higher standard, like love or true justice.
I see.
The source even says, 1 Corinthians, "My conscience is clear, but that does not make me innocent." The conscience needs an external authority, a fixed standard, to correctly judge right and wrong.
Wow, that completely shifts the focus. It's not about teaching them that they have a conscience, but teaching them what standard to apply to the prompts it gives them.
Yes, and understanding those prompts is step one. This system has two main functions. First, it prompts us before an action. That's your preventative guidance.
Okay.
And second, it evaluates us after the action is done. That's the accountability piece.
Let's stick with the preventative guidance first. The sources break down those before prompts into five categories. I imagine you have to help a child recognize these signals, right? Otherwise, it's just noise.
It is just noise.
Yeah.
So the first and maybe the most foundational are what they call moral promptings. These deal with the big issues of right and wrong.
What does that look like in, say, a six-year-old? It's not going to be some deep philosophical debate.
No, it's immediate. It's visceral. It's that moment on the playground where they can either show kindness to the lonely kid or join the group that's being cruel.
Okay.
It's that inner whisper that says, "Don't take revenge," or "Share that toy." It's a basic choice between self-control and selfishness. That's the conscience at its most fundamental level.
So beyond that core morality, what's the second type of prompt?
The second area is honesty promptings. This is the conscience guiding integrity. So don't lie, don't steal, don't cover up a mistake.
And this is a tricky one because lying is often just the easiest path when a kid is scared of getting in trouble.
It is. The conscience is that internal voice arguing for transparency and truth, even when it might be painful. So the child breaks a vase, and the conscience says, tell the truth, even though you might get disciplined.
And the parent's job then is to make sure the consequences don't completely crush that honesty prompt.
Exactly. You're rewarding the honesty, even if you're addressing the broken vase. The third category is a bit different. Responsibility promptings. This is about fulfilling one's duty.
But hold on, isn't telling a kid to clean their room just external motivation? How do we know we aren't just conditioning them?
That's the critical distinction. Rote repetition teaches a habit. Conscience training teaches internal duty.
Okay.
The responsibility prompt is that internal nudge a child feels when they walk past a mess they know is their job to fix. We're training them to see turning off lights or putting clothes in the hamper, not as tasks we give them, but as duties required for living honorably.
Ah, I see. So it moves from mom told me to do this to this needs to be done and I'm the one who should do it.
That is the whole goal, which leads right into the fourth category. Courtesy promptings.
Courtesy can feel so superficial, like just manners.
But the source frames it as honor, not just etiquette. It's the conscience prompting them toward genuine consideration for others.
Like what?
Like offering to help someone without being asked, holding the door, or actively including a shy kid in a game. The prompt is saying, a person living honorably recognizes the needs of others and acts.
Right. And the fifth category, I'm guessing, ties back to the spiritual framework.
It does. It's spiritual promptings. For a child in this framework, the conscience might prompt them to pray before a meal, or remember a Bible verse when they're tempted, or just feel an internal conviction about a selfish attitude, even if nobody else sees it.
So we have this map of the conscience, five different channels of guidance. Now let's get into the practical side. How do we actually do the training?
Okay, five actionable tools. The first is super specific. You have to build obligation using the phrase, you need to, not I need you to.
That sounds like such a small change.
It's a small change with a huge psychological impact. I need you to clean your room keeps the responsibility external. It's about me.
It's tethered to the parent.
Exactly. But when you say you need to finish your homework before you play, you're framing it as an inherent requirement of the child's life. It mimics their own conscience. Think about it. As adults, our inner voice says, you need to get gas, or you need to pay your bills.
You're basically acting as a loudspeaker for their own future internal voice. That's fascinating. What's tool number two?
You have to frequently highlight right and wrong. Don't save those words just for big moral crises. Apply them to everyday things. That was the wrong way to leave the bathroom floor. Or, thank you, that was the right way to get my attention.
Yeah.
It creates a clear framework for their conscience to use.
And the third tool is just calling it out directly.
Yes. Raise conscience awareness. Talk about it. Name it. There's a great little story about a six-year-old asks what his heart says, and he says, bum, bum, bum.
Right.
The parent's job is to teach them that sometimes it also says, do the right thing or tell the truth. You want them to recognize that internal feeling.
And if you raise awareness, you have to give it a standard to work with.
Which brings us to tool number four. Establish scripture as the standard. Since the conscience is always looking for an authority, you have to provide one. Otherwise, it'll just default to peer pressure or, you know, popular opinion.
Yeah.
You use stories like Daniel to show what a correctly calibrated conscience looks like in action.
And the last one is about us, the parents.
Tool number five, celebrate conscience wins and model sensitivity. When you see your kid do the right thing without being asked, celebrate the mechanism. Say, I can tell your conscience was really working there. You listened to it.
And then you have to model it yourself.
You have to. My conscience is telling me I need to finish this work first, or I can't in good conscience let you go to that party. It shows this is a real guiding force for everyone.
Okay, that covers the preventative part, the prompting before the action. Now, this is where it gets really interesting for me. The evaluation phase, the aftermath. What happens when a choice is made?
Well, when a child has done the wrong thing, the prompt they feel is guilt. The source describes guilt as a God-given, valuable emotion. It brings awareness of a wrong choice, and, this is crucial, it leads to repentance and fixing things.
We have to stop on this for a second, because that runs so counter to a lot of modern thinking that says all guilt is toxic. The distinction between guilt and shame here is everything.
It is absolutely critical. We have to avoid shaming the child. Shame is a counterfeit conviction. It's damaging.
So what's the difference?
Guilt points to the action that was wrong. You did the wrong thing, and you should feel guilt because you caused harm. It focuses on behavior.
It prompts repair.
Yes. Shame, on the other hand, attacks the person. You're a bad person for doing that. It attacks their identity, and that just shuts them down. Our job is to nurture healthy guilt and completely reject shame.
And on the flip side, when they do the right thing, there's a positive evaluation.
Yes. A sense of accomplishment. It's the reward that's built right into the moral wiring relief, peace, satisfaction. When they obey their conscience, they feel good, and that reinforces the behavior more powerfully than any sticker chart ever could.
And this whole framework, the need for quiet reflection prompted by guilt, that's the basis for a disciplinary strategy mentioned in the sources called the break.
The break is a way to discipline the heart, not just the behavior. You say to a child who is angry or out of control, you're off track. You need to go take a break, settle down, change your heart, and come back when you're ready.
It leverages the conscience because anger just drowns it out, right?
Anger is the greatest muffler of the conscience. When emotions are high, that internal guidance system goes silent.
Okay.
So sitting for a break isn't just a punishment. It's designed to let the anger fade so the conscience prompts can rise to the surface. The child has to engage their own internal equipment and come back when they're actually ready to work on the problem.
Yeah.
It puts the responsibility right back on them.
So wrapping up this whole deep dive, the takeaway seems pretty clear. External motivation only works when you're standing right there.
Right.
True, long-term character building comes from training this moral compass that's already there.
At the end of the day, it's about building the strongest kind of motivation there is, internal motivation, the kind that's driven by love, gratitude, and faithfulness, not just fear of punishment or desire for praise. That's what helps a child grow into a responsible adult who follows their convictions.
And this brings us right back to that crucial point we talked about. If the conscience needs a standard, and you teach your child that the scriptures are that absolute standard, you still have to prepare them for the world. So what happens when the standards they get from society, from social media, from their friends, directly conflict with that standard you're teaching? What part of this training we've discussed becomes the most critical in that moment of conflict? That's the final thought for you to carry forward from this deep dive.